This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ninety minutes to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the Anaheim Ducks color analyst and former Winnipeg Jets 1.0 member, Brian Hayward. Brian, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Doing real well, thanks.
That's good. Obviously brought you on to talk about tomorrow evening's Jets-Ducks game in Anaheim. Talk a little bit about Timu Solani, of course, as well, given it's the Timu tribute night tomorrow evening. You know, having played for the Jets in the early and mid-1980s, does tomorrow night's Timu celebration carry any extra meaning for you?
You know what? That's such a long time ago. To be honest with you, this celebration for me is all about Timu and the impact that he had on our franchise here in Anaheim. I mean, he was the face of the franchise for 15 years. It's a big deal down here because, and there's never been a jersey retired before with the Ducks. And very appropriately, Timu is the guy whose jersey is going to be lifted to the rafters. So to be honest, I think more of it from the perspective of Solani, the impact he had in his short time in Winnipeg on the Jets and the unbelievable impact that he's had on this hockey market down here in Southern California.
You know, Brian, you know, on this show especially and in this city, you know, we always talk about what Timu meant in Winnipeg and in his four seasons in Winnipeg, but he obviously spent a lot of time in Anaheim where you are, won the Stanley Cup in 2007. Can you speak about the fans specifically in Anaheim and what Timu means in Anaheim and their love for him?
Well, I would say that, you know, he's obviously the most popular player in the history of the franchise, and he was a guy that I've used this line many times when people ask me about Timu. He's the professional athlete we wish all professional athletes were like, or were more like. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's so open to the fan base. I always tell the story when he first moved to Southern California and his family, they bought a home in a community called Yorba Linda, which is a little satellite city about a half an hour away from the Honda Center here in Anaheim. And the first thing he did was put a big sign on the outside of his house that said the Solanis. And it was something that was shocking to people down here because professional athletes here typically are hidden behind gates and, you know, relatively secluded communities. But that was just Timu. He was wide open, available to speak to anyone, always available to promote the sport. And Southern California has needed that person to kind of take the mantle from Wayne Gretzky, who introduced everyone to hockey here, and to take it to a whole other level. And I think that's what he was able to do.
Yeah, on that point, Brian, leads well into the next question. You talk about Wayne Gretzky being traded to Los Angeles and really being primarily responsible for the growth of the game in Southern California and Northern California and really the Southwestern United States. Can you talk about Solani and then obviously Paul Kariya and the contributions of Anaheim and the players of kind of the mid-90s to that growth? I know Solani's son played in the area, and we see a lot of players now, younger players in the National Hockey League, who've played hockey as youngsters in Orange County and in Southern California.
Yeah, there's a whole generation coming, too, of kids that have grown up with Kariya and Solani as their heroes. And if you talk to some of the guys in our own organization, we have a youngster by the name of Emerson Edom, mm-hmm. who trained and was, you know, learned how to play the sport here in Southern California, went to the Western Hockey League when he was at the age of, I think, 16 or 17. And he's going to be a real good professional player. There are more and more Emerson Edoms in the pipeline now than there ever has been. It's impossible to rent ice time in Southern California. Every building is booked solid because of hockey. And so it started, obviously, in the streets in a warm weather climate like this. Roller hockey gained a foothold, then ice hockey, and now both are absolutely exploding. Our ownership group here with the Ducks, for example, now controls 9 different rinks, 3 roller rinks, 6 ice rinks,
wow,
with plans to build an additional probably 4 to 8 sheets in the next 5 years just to try and keep up with the demand. A lot of that has to do with winning, obviously. The Ducks have been an incredibly successful franchise in the past decade. And I think winning the Cup in 2007 with the team that they had that year, I think really captured the imagination of the fans here. And with the Kings now winning twice in the last 3 seasons, yeah, I think it's easy to understand why hockey's booming here.
The Ducks obviously want their turn to raise the Cup. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Brian Hayward, Anaheim Ducks color analyst. Brian, the Ducks are now second in the NHL in points after Nashville leapfrogged them with their win earlier this afternoon. Yet the team has only got a +2 goal differential so far this season. Is that an area of concern for the team?
Well, I think there's lots of areas of concern. This is a contending team that probably has found ways to win games, but hasn't dominated the way that they have dominated teams in maybe the past years. Goals haven't come as easily for them. So I think the primary concern is the special teams right now, both in the lower half of the league, and given the talent that they have on the roster, it's a little bit surprised. But I don't think that, you know, it's funny, you go through the locker room and you see where the team is positioned with the second most points in the NHL, and no player is satisfied here. I mean, they all think that there's a lot more to give. And I think you also have to factor in that there is no other team that has been hit as hard by injuries, by illness, than the Ducks were. They lost more man games than any other team in the league. So I think they've done a pretty good job to maintain their hold at the top of the league or near the top of the league. But I think the expectation level is that they'll generate more points in the second half than they did in the opening half.
Brian, when you look at the Ducks group of defensemen and start with Cam Fowler, who I think is their best defenseman, I think you'd probably agree with that, and Hampus Lindholm and Sami Vatanen, both in their second year, they continue to improve. Do you think this group is good enough to take them back to a Stanley Cup final and win in the Stanley Cup, or do you think they might need to add another defenseman to this group?
I think it depends on what happens in the next 6 to 8 weeks. I think, obviously, they probably have the best young defense in the league, but they're young. And Lindholm, I think, is a star. He's 20. He's much like I see with Trouba in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
He's just an absolute star in the making. And I feel that way about Trouba as well. But are they dominant players night in and night out? Not yet. Physically, they're not finished developing yet. So I don't know if this team is finished yet. And certainly if they're going to add, I would expect that they would add another blue liner. But one of the things that they thought with the addition of Eric Brewer that they really had 7 top flight guys that they could put in the lineup. Unfortunately, Brewer broke his foot the second game that he played after they traded for him. They don't really know what they got yet. They're going to know pretty quickly, I think, where he fits into that equation and what they need to add. The good news for fans here is that the Ducks have more cap space than almost any other team in the league. So they're well positioned to package some young players or just to, you know, grab hold of that one key veteran that a non-playoff team, you know, wants to unload for salary and draft picks. So they're really well set up to make that one move if they want to make that one move.
You know, we talk a lot about, Brian, a lot about the stars of the team, and we haven't talked about Getzlaff, but we talk about Fowler and those guys. What about a guy like Nate Thompson? Getting him in the offseason, he's been dependable, played a lot of games on a team that's had a bunch of injuries, and you mentioned flu and different things they've dealt with, and obviously contributing to the penalty kill, which, as you mentioned, hasn't been great, but he's certainly been a contributing factor here and a kind of a different kind of player on those bottom lines. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I think they made a a decision during the off season to add in some players that weren't going to generate maybe as many points mm-hmm. as players that were in those spots in previous years, but that they had identified as better playoff players, grittier, a little more willingness to get into the gritty areas in the playoffs where penalties aren't called the same way. And when you're taking on the Kings, you have to be playing that style. So, you know, the big offseason acquisition was obviously Kessler, who's been phenomenal, but kind of flying under the radar was Nate Thompson. And in addition to him, Clayton Stoner. And both of those guys, I mean, you look at their numbers and there's nothing real impressive about their seasons thus far, but I will tell you this, they've made the Ducks a harder team to play against in those games against people like the Kings. And ultimately, that's what it boils down to for the Ducks this season. It's going to be the Kings and the Ducks, I would expect, that come, one of those two guys are coming out of the Pacific this year. The Sharks may make a little bit of a run, but I don't see anyone else really as a threat in the Pacific. And in order to get through the Stanley Cup champs, you got to have people like Nate Thompson in your lineup.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Brian Hayward. Brian is the Anaheim Ducks color analyst. Brian, entering the season, everybody was sort of thinking that the goaltending position was going to be John Gibson's to really take over and to win and be the goaltender of the future for the Ducks. Well, Frederik Andersen has started 34 games. No one else has started more than six for the Ducks. You know, how do you see that playing itself out for the rest of the year? Is the team comfortable riding Frederik Andersen into a playoff playoff race?
Well, first of all, I thought Frederik Andersen was absolutely robbed for an all-star nomination. You know, I understand about the fan vote and Corey Crawford being voted in, but it's Pecorino and Frederik Andersen in the Western Conference in the first half of the season, and it's not close otherwise. I mean, Ryan Miller would be a solid third. But he's been that good. So yeah, they're definitely comfortable with him. He's a big guy. I mean, he's another one of these monstrous goaltenders. He's over 6'4". He's almost 240 pounds. And he's a really solid goaltender. He's been playing actually his best hockey just in the past couple of weeks, even though the team hasn't been winning. I think Andersen are winning as much, winning at the same rate as they were earlier. He's been terrific. So I think what's going on with John Gibson, Gibson's 21. They're going to leave him in the American League. He's got a little bit of a history of getting injured more frequently than certainly they would be comfortable with as anointing him as their number one guy. And I think Gibson's got to be in the American League, and he's got to prove to them that he can stay healthy and take on a whole pile of games before he's back into the mix. But they have a, you know, they're in a pretty darn good spot here with their goaltending for many years to come, with Andersen, you know, kind of leading the charge right now, and with John Gibson in the wings waiting.
Final question for you, Brian, a little bit off of the Ducks topic, but with the Ducks tie. Randy Carlyle, former coach of the Ducks for many years, of course, let go, and then eventually ends up in Toronto, actually a former teammate of yours. How did you think that was all handled, and what do you think was Randy's biggest downfall in Toronto vis-a-vis, you know, his biggest downfall maybe in Anaheim?
I think that, like a lot of coaches in the National Hockey League, I don't care who it is, with the modern athlete, the message gets stale after a while. I think Randy's a very good coach. I think the feeling here in Anaheim was that it was the same every day, the same types of practices, the same types of drills, the same commentary made in the locker room. And after a while, the message got stale, and players weren't as reactive to the message as certainly the management expected them or wanted them or needed them to be. And that's why Randy was let go here in Anaheim. But I don't think that's shocking. I mean, that's what happens with probably 90% of the coaches that are dismissed. He's a very good coach, and I don't think it'll be too long before he's back. I think it'll be more a case of Randy trying to find the right fit before he takes his next coaching job. I can't speak to what happened in Toronto or how it was handled. I'm not really all that familiar with it. But, you know, the modern-day NHL coach seems to have a lifespan.
Brian Hayward covers the Anaheim Ducks. He's their color analyst on television. Brian, we appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us, and enjoy the tribute to Teemu Selänne tomorrow evening.
It's going to be fun, guys. Thanks.
Take care, Brian. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Brian Hayward for joining us to talk about the Anaheim Ducks, talk about the Timu Tribute Night. If you want to get in on that conversation, use hashtag Timu1290. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. We'll read some of the best ones on air. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Thought we'd spend the next 10 minutes with some of our memories of Timu Solani. Of course, we happen to be of the sort of the target demographic who sort of remember the Timu times, and that he was such a hero to people probably our age in and around. You guys were about probably what, 10, 11?
Well, Drew, you're only 1 year older than me.
I was setting you up for an old joke that I was about 55 when he scored the when he broke Bossy's record.
We've talked about this before. You can't make fun of yourself with the age jokes.
Exactly,
only
right.
We can make fun of you.
I can completely make fun of myself. That ruins the age jokes for you. So it's a win-win situation for me.
Yeah, but anyways, if we move away from age jokes, Drew, you don't know where we'll go next.
Well, the hairline is available for you to talk about if you'd like. your memories of Timu, guys. What jumps out to you most there? We'll start with you, Richard. And throughout the segment, we'll also hear from John Paddock and Phil Housley.
They're on the line?
No, they're not on the line, but we've spoken to them about this over the years.
I'm kidding. You know what, Drew? You grew up in Winnipeg around guys around our age, and you, I mean, Timu Solani was the guy, like Bobby Hall was years before for our dad's generation. And Timu Solani was this incredible. Tim Campbell's interview with Timu Solani that was in the paper, and then the video online as well. You just hear him talking about recounting those days in the mid-90s and coming to Winnipeg, and to come in and have such a forceful entrance into the league. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be able to score 76 goals in that first year. I had the opportunity, luckily enough, to be at the game where he broke Mike Bossy's record. Of course, everybody remembers that signed 52, 53, 54, and Bossy's record is no more, right? Yeah. I sat in that section, in section 29 of the old Winnipeg Arena. I was at the game with my dad, and that was that corner, the corner where Solani tipped the puck over Stefan Fasse's diving body and beat Adam Foote to the puck, and kind of set that record. You didn't think it would happen. I mean, you hoped it would happen that night. Remember, he had a hat trick in that game.
He had four goals the night before.
Yeah. And whatever, I think a hat trick, or did he score another one that night?
No, I think he scored three that night and four the night before. He had seven in two games to get to 55 goals at that point.
And it was a spectacle because who knew what he was going to do? I mean, the guy was scoring basically a goal a game. I know there were goals in the 90s, but still, I mean, that's crazy levels of production. And he comes in just a celebration, throwing the glove, and the excitement in the arena, how lively it was to see him play. I remember the game that he broke the points record against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Had the opportunity to be at that game as well with my hockey team, and we had actually played that day at the rink, like at the Winnipeg Arena.
I remember the old, yeah.
And so Timu Solani came out when we came into the arena to play during the day. Solani was walking into the arena and took pictures with everybody, signed everybody's autographs. I have those jackets and hats and all that in my closet somewhere.
And then Solani asked you for your autograph,
Richie. And then and we got to play that day. Actually, it was against the Maple Leafs, so that's the old Wendell Clark, Dave Andrzejczyk, and then that team. And Solani broke Peter Stastny's points record for a rookie. I believe that was
132, right?
132, I thought it was, yeah. Or is that what he ended up with?
Maybe that's what he ended up with.
I think the record was something in 120s, maybe. In any event, it was just an incredible experience to be able to see him break both of those records, and nobody ever expected that, and I don't think anybody will ever break those records. 76 goals for a rookie, it's insane.
I think both those records will stand forever.
And he carried himself, he performed so well on the ice, and yet he was just even more likable off the ice, which is rare, especially in this day and age, and how he engages the fans. And you heard Brian Hayward talking about what he was like when he moved, putting up a sign in Anaheim. I mean, the memories. The first his first playoff series against Vancouver. I think it was Game 3. He scored a hat trick and the Jets won Game 3. That was an incredible environment with the whiteouts and getting called out as a finished crash in the Vancouver Sun, I believe it was, and coming back and posting a hat trick. And that was against Bure in that back and forth series. So the memories can go on, but they're just great. I mean, I was at all those games, and I can remember those games vividly.
Ezzy, before we hear about your reminiscences, here's John Paddock on if he's surprised that Timu Selanne is so beloved in Winnipeg.
No, I'm not surprised for numerous reasons. All the things we talked about, or I spoke about him individually at the start of the show. Let's face it, the fans of Winnipeg and Manitoba are as outgoing, as emotional, as into it, into the game and into hockey as any place in North America. So, you know, it's since he started his career there in the standing first year, I mean, it's like a LaFleur, it's in Montreal, it's like an Orr in Boston, you know, Wayne in Edmonton. I think there's that relationship. And what he accomplished, especially that first year, and then, you know, unfortunately, you know, what happened with him and then the team moving, it left a gap. But, I mean, I don't think it's surprising at all. I think it's just how it should be and would be.
Former Winnipeg Jets head coach and general manager John Paddock talking about Timu Selanne. Ezzy, your memories about Timu?
Well, as Richie said, there's tons of memories. You know, unfortunately, one of the bad memories was hearing about the day he was traded, being a, you know, kid at the time who was, 14 years old or
remember
something.
Remember where you were?
I do remember where I was, which is kind of odd. I was, and surprisingly, it wasn't eating ice cream, but it was I was playing soccer. I was practicing playing little River Heights soccer, and so one of the other kids on the team came up and said that finally he'd been traded, and there were rumors before that. Uh-huh. You know, Richard Burke and was it Gluckstern was,
yes,
the other
Steven
owner.
Gluckstern.
You know, so but you know, getting back to what Richie was talking about, all those memories, the rookie year. I think the reason why, you know, Timu was so loved and embraced basically instantly was because it was post Dale Hawerchuk. You know, the team was looking for its next superstar.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Really, the 76 goal season came out of nowhere. Selanne went into the Army after he was drafted in Finland, and Tim Campbell talked about it in his article today. He went into the Army, and then he ended up playing in the Olympics.
That's right.
Before coming over. So it was 4 years after 1988 when he was drafted 10th overall by the Jets, and he came in, and there was a lot of hype surrounding him. People forget that the Calgary Flames signed him to an offer sheet. And the Winnipeg Jets had to match that offer sheet to keep Timu. And, you know, that's something that, you know, is not talked about a lot. But he was someone who, you know, they saw how good he was in the Olympics and how good he was in Finland. And there was some hype about him. But it wasn't like, we're not talking Crosby, right, McDavid, right, type of, yeah, hype. So for him to come into the league, score 76 goals. And as Richie mentioned, you know, you're going to hear this a lot. You heard this, unfortunately, when John Beliveau passed away. But him off the ice, Timu off the ice, I mean, the guy is a class act. You know, everyone has their own Timu story about signing autographs, or, you know, when he was a rookie, a 22-year-old playing hockey, street hockey, you know, in River Heights, you know, the neighborhood kids knocking on his door. The guy speaks so glowingly of his time in Winnipeg, even though it was only 4 years. But, you know, the reception he deserves all of the accolades. As far as I'm concerned, he's the best European player ever. No offense to Jari Kurri, who was his idol. But I think that Timu is the best European player of all time. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. The guy, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think I've ever met, you know, just to you know, say how much he's loved. I don't think I've ever met anyone that's ever said anything negative about Timu, and that just speaks to the type of guy he is.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Do you remember where you were, Richie, when you heard about the trade?
Oh, yeah. Come on, Drew.
Okay, I figured you did. I mean, you have a vivid memory of everything to do with the Winnipeg
Drew,
Jets.
Richie playing outdoor hockey. I was playing outdoor hockey.
Richie was writing the LSAT.
My dad, yeah, can't. Yeah, right. My dad came to pick me up, and he told me he got traded. Shocked.
Did you cry?
No, I didn't cry, Drew, actually, but I was surprised, and then my dad told me what they got for him, and I was more surprised.
No, you got angry at that point in time.
Well, I said, well, was it, did they at least get Paul Kariya? And he said, no, Chad Kilger and Oleg Tvardovsky. I was like, what?
Here's Phil Housley talking about Timu Selanne.
I know there was a combination, you know, I think I went on that 18-game point streak that I remember was fascinating for me, because I never went on a game point streak for that long a period of time, and Gosh, I'd have to say maybe Timo's record-breaking goal. I mean, and that sits out in my memory. Also, you know, when Randy Carlyle, Timo, and myself were made the All-Star game in 93. So, you know, it's not like maybe one individual thing. It's great to share a lot of things with your teammates, and that's the way I look at that.
That was Phil Housley talking about Timo Solani and his memories of heading to the All-Star game, which is a perfect segue as we go to break, because when we come back, we'll unveil our All-Star teams, because the NHL is about to unveil their All-Star teams. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing to Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Nate Bargatze, the 7:15 p.m. show, is completely sold out. Some tickets still available for the 10 o'clock show. Check out RumorsComedyClub.com for the entire list of upcoming comedians. Some great acts to be at Rumors in the next few months. Gentlemen, the NHL is unveiling their All-Star team, supposed to be in the next number of minutes, and we're beginning to see some of the names trickle out, and we'll bring that to you towards the end of this segment. Obviously, want to talk to you guys first about who you have for your All-Star teams. Ezzy, we'll start with you.
Yeah, it's coming out now. Dustin Byfuglien has been named to the NHL All-Star game, which is much deserving. I think, you know, the way Buff has played, especially over the last month, guys, switching back to defense.
If Byfuglien can make the team, I would pick Trouba then, because Byfuglien's only been really that impactful for the past, what, 6 weeks?
But Trouba couldn't play, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying getting that on your title, you know?
Yeah.
Jacob Trouba, All-Star.
I thought it was going to be Michael Hutchinson, to be honest.
He only played 17 games, though.
I know, but I know he's only played 17 games. I get all that, but given his performance, you know, Byfuglien, I don't have a problem with Byfuglien. Byfuglien at the All-Star game could be a lot of fun. And remember, this is the first actual time the Jets have had an All-Star. Because in the first year of their return, Dustin Byfuglien was named as the Jets' All-Star representative. He was injured. They offered the spot to, I believe, Tobias Enstrom, who had already booked a vacation, wasn't able to make the rearrange his schedule to go to the All-Star game. Then the second year was the lockout shortened year. The third year, there was the Olympics. So finally, congratulations to Dustin Byfuglien, as he is the Winnipeg Jets representative at the 2014-15 NHL All-Star game set for Columbus later on this month.
Yeah, it's much deserved for Dustin Byfuglien, as far as I'm concerned. And that doesn't mean that other players weren't deserving. Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, Andrew Ladd, you know, top three in scoring for the Winnipeg Jets. As you mentioned, Michael Hutchinson, his numbers are at the top of the league, even though he's only played 17 games. But I think, you know, for Dustin Byfuglien, he'll be great as well, guys, at the All-Star game. He's a guy that is very well liked. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people get on Buff because he doesn't say tons in post-game scrums or whatever. But, you know, he's a guy, you watch him around the team, he likes to have a lot of fun. So it's good. It's great to see.
So let's talk about who your All-Stars, and then at the end of the segment, I'll go through the entire list of those who have been selected. So, Ezzy, who are your All-Star, your starters, let's say, for the Western Conference, even though they don't do it that way, they do the stupid draft and everything else?
Yeah, and you know, that's why Peter Laviolette is the coach alongside Daryl Sutter, because it goes by winning percentage. So that's why, in case you were wondering why there are two Western Conference coaches that were picked. But obviously, Drew, we know that the starters after Zemgus Girgensons, there's five Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah,
so,
but let's pick real starters here.
I'm just saying.
Like the NBA does it.
Right, just so you know, in case people didn't know why, I'm not picking any Chicago Blackhawks. But I think if you're talking about first starting off with the Western Conference, for me, the starting goaltender's got to be Pekka Rinne.
Yeah.
You know, he's been incredible. He's been a huge part of the reason why the Nashville Predators in the time... so far right now, I should say at the present moment, they're in first place. So for me, Pekka Rinne is my starting goaltender in the West, and his teammate Shea Weber is a starting defenseman in the Western Conference. To me, he's the best defenseman in the NHL. I know Richie probably doesn't disagree with that. And to me, the guy that lines up beside Shea Weber, and this, again, this isn't left side, right side, anything like that. I'm just picking guys. To me, is Mark Giordano for the Calgary Flames. I think he's a Norris candidate this year, and I think he should be the representative for the Calgary Flames. And moving to forwards for me in the Western Conference.
Before you get to forwards, I'm going to be boring because I have the exact same three starters as Ezzy so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not boring, Richie. Those guys deserve it. For me, Ryan Getzlaff is my center. In the Western Conference, to me, he's the first half MVP of the league, and I think that's not anything that is really that much of a revelation. To me, the other starters in the Western Conference, I'm going to go with Tyler Seguin. He's at the top of the NHL scorers. I don't think that's any bit of a surprise. And again, I'm not really going by positions. I'm just picking, you know, yeah, who I think, you know, are the top three guys in the Western Conference. And I guess for me, you know, my third starter, because this is supposed to be the, you know, the best players, you know, in the Western Conference. I'll go with Joe Pavelski as my third starter.
Ooh, reaching hard there, eh? I wanted to go by starters in terms of position, and so I had Rene, and I think he's, as he mentioned, he's been great. Then you talk about Shea Weber, kind of really creating a different kind of style of play in Nashville and being the horse there, you know, being the horse for Trotz in the previous way they played, now being a horse for Laviolette, a little bit more open. And Giordano, you know, him and Brody play together, both left-handed shooting guys, but I'll put him as the left side guy. I'm going to do that kind of starting lineup.
Sure.
My center is Tyler Seguin. He's been incredible. As he mentioned, Seguin as a guy he had there as well. I'm going to do center. Left wing would be Henrik Zetterberg. You know, he's the kind of guy that nobody really talks about because he's old reliable. Can play center, can play wing, can play in all situations. And I'm pretty sure now I'm thinking about it, he actually would be in the East.
Yeah, he would be in the East. So
I was gonna say something, but you know. All right. Okay, go ahead.
We'll just do wings then. We'll just do Patrick Kane and Vladimir Tarasenko. I think Tarasenko and Kane kind of have some similarities in the style of play. But
yeah, they're really, really good.
Yeah, but you know, Tarasenko has been a revelation really for St. Louis because his skill set was always there. I can't believe I made that Detroit mistake. His skill set was always there, but he's taken it to the next level. And for a St. Louis team that's added Paul Stastny because they wanted to increase their offensive capability and their depth up front, Tarasenko gives them a different dimension, the skating and shooting ability that they're not the fastest team. So it makes it more difficult to defend line by line now. How do you match up your defense pairings? So those would be my five guys from the West. I'll move over to the East.
Did Zetterberg make
the East? No, he didn't make the East. Because I look at the East. You know, it's funny. The East, I had a real tough time with the defense. And I'll tell you, the goaltender, I have Luongo. Some people may have Price. Luongo, I mean, the way Florida's played. And you look at Edmonton and you look at teams, you know, trying to rebuild here. Florida, getting a guy like Luongo, immediately solidifying the pipes there. He's been great. On the back end, I got P.K. Subban as a right side guy. The left side guy, if you're looking for a left side guy, it's impossible to find one in the Eastern Conference. Looking for that left side guy to really play that role. So I pick Mark Stahl, but I mean, if you're looking for defensemen, there's certainly more than six defensemen there that are worthy of the spot. And then up front, Jakub Voracek has been incredible.
There is, in the NHL's release, yeah, there is one defenseman from the Eastern Conference that were selected by the NHL.
So there you go. So if you're doing it that way, and I like
and
to do it that
Justin,
way.
That's Justin Falk of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, and I like to do it that way, Drew, though, because you're talking about differences of style of play, and, you know, Jim Fox and was talking
Brian
about
Hayward,
that.
Yeah.
And Brian Hayward talking about that. Left wing I have on the Eastern Conference, Rick Nash. Rick Nash has been incredible this year.
He made the team.
Yeah, and he should have made the team. And then in center, I have Tyler Johnson, who is taken into account.
He made the team as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, the line, that line, and how powerful it's been for Tampa Bay and providing the depth now with Stamkos. Tyler Johnson is a worthy, right. I think, worthy starting center for the. And again, they don't do it that way. That's the way I look at it. He would be a starting center, and amazing to think of what Tampa's done with so many of the guys that were not drafted or were drafted late and the development. And we had Brendan McCarthy on talking about it takes some time. Well, this speaks to how much time it takes sometimes to develop these players.
Ezzy, your Eastern Conference All-Stars.
Detroit in the West?
Detroit is in the East.
You know, I forget that sometimes too, Richie. I forget what my own name is sometimes.
It's Ezra. You can go even with Ezzy.
I was being tongue-in-cheek, Drew.
Actually, he was just trying to eat his tongue, I think, is what he was doing there.
Okay, let's get through to the All-Stars here. In the Eastern Conference, you know, I'm going to take Carey Price, but yeah. I haven't looked at the full list, but I think I know Carey Price did, but Roberto Luongo, I hope, made it too.
He did.
Yeah, and so I think that's a great pick by Richie there. So I'm going to go Carey Price as my starting goalie in the Eastern Conference. As far as defensemen, I got to go with P.K. Subban for the Montreal Canadiens.
Didn't make it.
I'm still going to go with P.K. Subban.
That's fine.
And I guess for my other defensemen, that's a tough one.
Same problem that Richard had.
If you're looking, as he can give you a second here, but if you're looking for a starting lineup, you're looking for a left side guy.
I'm going to go Cronwall
in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, okay, I can see that. But like, it is. You think to yourself, "Ooh, you know, talk about the right side guys being so valuable. What about the left side guys here? Maybe that's something we should examine a little bit more."
Right, and you know, year after year, a guy that you always would expect there, Zdeno Chara, yeah. And you know, this year
hasn't played enough.
You look at some of the teams that are doing really well in the Eastern Conference: Tampa Bay, the Islanders. Victor Hedman is a guy that is in the right conversation. I think you might even talk about, again, Islanders. They don't really have a quote unquote number one defenseman. Hamonic, DeHaan,
right side guy,
Boychuk, Letty.
DeHaan, yeah, but
right. So I mean, I'll go with
McDonough's been injured,
right? So I'll go with Nicholas Cronwall.
Sure.
And as far as my starters go, I mean, starting center's got to be Crosby. And I imagine I'd be shocked if he wasn't.
He made it.
He didn't make it.
Don't worry, he made it.
So Sidney Crosby, Jakub Voracek. I think the Philadelphia Flyers lost again today, and they've had a tough year. But I got to pick Jakub Voracek there.
He made it
on the right wing, and then I guess as my other forward. You know, there's a lot of forwards. I like Tyler Johnson's inclusion. He's a center playing with Kucherov and Andre Palat on the Lightning second line there. My third, I guess, you know, if I'm taking a left wing, I didn't organize it like this. That's the thing. I just picked players. Just
pick a player.
I'll go. Again,
don't pick a player. Really, it's fine.
Starters.
Not over on radio.
Well, I guess I'll take, even though he's a center, I'll take Tavares.
Okay.
And the thing is Tavares has been such a key to that team on the island because, you know, for example, he plays in Winnipeg. It comes through. It doesn't get that many points. Doesn't put up crazy totals, but the keys for, and even Tyler Johnson, you know, when I pick a guy like Tyler Johnson, when you're playing behind a guy like Stamkos or behind a guy like Tavares or whatever it may be, they take so much pressure off of you because they always match up against those top guys, right? And so sometimes you're not going to get those points, but even so, easier minutes for the rest of your teammates. And certainly the All-Star game doesn't take into account all of these factors, and now they're just trying to put a bunch of guys in there for the draft. And I don't like that. It just as an aside, obviously you guys know I don't like the All-Star game, and I frankly don't watch it.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at the draft picks, I just think when you're doing the draft, I think you lose the identity of the game. I even like the world versus North America or whatever it may be to give you something of a framework.
Sure.
I think now you just have a bunch of players and then they just play on a team. You don't have any memories from it. I don't think, you know, even if you go back to years before Owen Nolan, remember, guys, when he pointed on Dominic Hasek?
Yeah.
That was still an East-West thing. You can still recall that. Now it's not going to be like, oh, I remember Crosby's team against Malkin's or, you know, against whoever's team.
It's just, it might as well just not happen. It's sort of it's a blip in time at best.
As long as they, you know, it's for the kids, and I understand that. But overall, the All-Star stuff isn't my favorite.
Here's the entire list very quickly, not including the six starters that have been named before. The five goaltenders in addition to the sixth, in addition to Corey Crawford, are Sergei Bobrovsky, Carey Price, Pekka Rinne, Jimmy Howard, and Roberto Luongo. On defense, Dustin Byfuglien and Drew Doughty, Kevin Shattenkirk and Eric Johnson, Brent Burns and Justin Falk, Shea Weber and Mark Giordano, Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Ryan Suter. On forward, Bobby Ryan of the Senators, Alex Ovechkin and Rick Nash, Radim Verbata and John Tavares, Phil Kessel and Patrick Elias, Tyler Johnson and Anze Kopitar, Steven Stamkos and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Vladimir Tarasenko and Tyler Seguin, Evgeny Malkin and Ryan Johansson, Sidney Crosby and Nick Foligno, Jakub Voracek and Patrice Bergeron, Claude Giroux and Ryan Getzlaff, and of course the six starters that were previously announced: Corey Crawford, Duncan Keith, Jonathan Toews, Brent Seabrook, Patrick Kane, and the Latvian wonder Žemgis Girgensons. Before we go to break, here's Dustin Byfuglien on being named an All-Star.
That's good. I guess it's a privilege and honor to represent your team and get to go hang out with some different teammates, I guess, for a weekend.
Fun being, or for you, an opportunity to be named as a defenseman. Does that add to it now that you're back on the blue line?
Yeah, it, you know, haven't been back there full time all year, you know, but, you know, it's an honor. It's, you know, I'm excited and, you know, still got a job to do and just got to keep working.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. 9 p.m. tonight, puck drop in Los Angeles, the Winnipeg Jets and the Los Angeles Kings. Michael Hutchinson in net for the Jets, expected to be Jonathan Quick in net for the LA Kings. An out-of-town scoreboard update, because there were three afternoon games, two of the three you know, tremendously relevant for Winnipeg Jets fans. The Colorado Avalanche have defeated the Dallas Stars 4-3 today in Denver. It's a clean win, so it's not a three-point game there.
It's not a dirty win.
It's not a dirty win. as a result, the Avalanche have leapfrogged the Dallas Stars and are now only 3 points back of the Winnipeg Jets. The Avalanche 7-3-0. In their last 10 games. So that team has certainly been on a hot streak, and they've played their way back into the Western Conference playoff race. The Minnesota Wild, losers at home this afternoon, 3-1 to the world beater Nashville Predators, and the Minnesota Wild are now really, really struggling, and you're beginning to wonder if it's too little, too late for them, as they're down to 41 points. They are there's four teams between them and the wild card spot. They're 6 points back of the Winnipeg Jets for that final wild
game
card
in hand,
spot.
Though.
A game in hand. Yep. 2-5-3 in their last 10 for the Minnesota Wild. So that's, you know, everyone was saying, well, they picked it up after the Christmas break last year. Same thing has not happened.
Well, Kemper's on IR now, too.
Darcy Kemper's on IR. Their goaltending is...
been a mess all year.
Yeah.
Richie, they gotta either make a trade or sign a goaltender.
I agree.
Yeah. You're wondering what's... they're just not doing anything, and you wonder how much, you know, what Chuck Fletcher's really waiting for.
Get Marty Broder in there.
Well, you know what? St. Louis has got three goaltenders, so you probably could do worse than to try and acquire him from St. Louis.
And they are in the same division, but I don't think St. Louis views them as a threat in terms of any... obviously, they're standing in the top three in that division. So
St. Louis, you know, signed him for just money, not a lot of money either at that point in time. If you can trade him and get some sort of asset, that's good asset management as far as I'm concerned.
That's fair.
And then in the final afternoon game in the NHL this afternoon, it came in the Eastern Conference. The Boston Bruins went into Philadelphia 3-1 victors over the Philadelphia Flyers.
I should note, Remus, you can attest to this. You can grab the mic for a second.
Remus,
I just want to make sure we recall that Ezzy and Drew gave the Boston Bruins last rights on Wednesday night, and since that, they've won three games in a row.
That's not true.
Yes,
what are you
it
talking
is
about? That's not true.
It's completely true.
Oh, yes. It's completely true.
I was wondering if you were going to bring it up, but it's 100%.
They won Wednesday, Thursday, and won today.
I said the Bruins would make the playoffs.
No, you said they were done. The window's closing.
That's absolutely not true.
Maybe we'll pull the audio first in the Wednesday show. Yeah,
I said that the Bruins would still make the playoffs.
If you can pull this show, that'd be amazing.
That's not, Richie, that's revisionist history if I've ever seen it.
We'll see.
Well, let's talk about another player who's been struggling, or we talked about a team that's struggling that's now turned it around in the Boston Bruins. Mike Richards. Still not sure if he's going to be a healthy scratch tonight or not for the Los Angeles Kings, as they didn't do line rushes
He's going to play tonight.
It seems like he's going to play.
It's a tough one because it's kind of his hometown game, too.
Exactly. Yeah. You would probably want to keep him in the lineup. He played 9:07 on Thursday, a season low for Mike Richards.
Yep.
Obviously making a ton of money still. And under contract for another, I believe it's 5 years until 2022, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, year seven of a 12-year.
Year seven of a 12-year deal. Struggling, not getting any points, not getting much ice time. You know, what are the Los Angeles Kings going to end up doing with Mike Richards, and how does this play itself out?
Richie, I'll jump in here first. I think, the reason why all of this talk came up was because Mike Richards was not on the fourth line in the practice lines 2 days ago, and Andy Andreev was in the practice lines, and that was the speculation that Mike Richards wasn't going to play. And there was a lot of speculation a couple years back, that Mike Richards was going to be bought out and traded, and, you know, he was a big part of the team that won the Stanley Cup last year. Not necessarily the points he put up there, but, you know, the depth, that he provides on the forward line. So as far as I'm concerned, I think, you know, he's a crucial part of this team, and I don't think he's going anywhere.
He also, I mean, as he's pointing about last year's contributions, he was pretty good in a couple of the games late in the playoffs, too, yeah. especially. But what do you do? I mean, is this a contract tradable?
Probably not.
I don't think his contract's tradable. Really.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit under, it's what, $5.75 million per year?
Cap hit, yes.
Cap hit.
It's a Paul Holmgren special, Richie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Paul Holmgren special, sure. I don't like those long-term deals, like a 12-year deal, which obviously you cannot sign anymore. What do you do? You hear Bob McKenzie's talked about it and his availability. Look at it. If you acquire Mike Richards with 5 years left at 5.75 and you don't think he can play in your top six, you can't take that amount of money on the books. Unless you're giving up, like, Vincent LeCavalier. That's the kind of thing you're looking at here.
A bad contract for bad contract to see if one of them maybe gets a spark as a result.
And I mean, I just toss out LeCavalier, like, Philly and Richards probably not going to happen again.
Right.
The idea, though, is that's what you're looking at. What else do you do? I mean, Mike Richards' fall-off here has been surprising. Now, it's happened slowly. I wouldn't say slowly, but... I mean, remember, he's 29 years old, guys. Like, yeah. and he's gone from essentially number one center on the Flyers squad that played the Hawks in, what, the 09 final?
Yeah.
5 years from now? From then? Like, 5 years from that day, from then? He's looking at being a fourth to fifth line player. I mean, really, he's a fourth line player now. Then a fifth line player? Like, he's not 38.
Right.
And he plays hard. He played hard for many years. We had Jim Fox, you know, referencing that. He was tough to play, still tough to play against. Skating has never been his forte, and he's not the biggest guy. So, I mean, both those things need to be thrown out there. But this fall off in general has been surprising because you figure that Richards is always kind of like a checking style player who could contribute offensively. And when the offense wouldn't come, he'd be that good checking, you know, that good checking line player. He's even having a problem at being overly effective in that role. And again, 5.75 for a third liner. When they made the move, when they didn't make the move after the cup, it was difficult, right? Because you win the Stanley Cup, Carter and Richards are buddies. There's obviously a lot of Philly ties in Los Angeles. Justin Williams as well. These guys are all buddies. And to buy him out just after the victory, and that's the problem too, is the buyout period. And the buyout this past offseason was the last opportunity to buy a player out without a cap ramifications. You could buy him out, just money, wouldn't count against the cap.
You can still buy him out now, but it's going to cost, you got a salary cap ramification.
It's going to cost you a king's ransom, get it?
Bravo.
And then the problem with buying him out now is ego too, because then you're Dean Lombardi, who's a bright guy, and he buys him out, and months ago he could have done it without a cap ramifications. And he might still have to do that because Justin Williams and Kopitar are coming up. Williams this year, and I believe Kopitar after next year, both for contract negotiations.
That's correct.
And what happens with Voinov, as Jim Fox alluded to, who knows what happens there? That could open up money, but also create a need to add a defenseman. So there's a moving parts, like many in National Hockey League teams. Everybody's got their own issues. But back to Richards, I mean, you buy him out, and you open up some room. I guess the question is, you have to look at it from a now perspective. After the cup was won, you had about a week. Remember, they didn't have much time. Once you win, because it was Olympic year, they had like a couple days to decide whether they were going to buy him out or not. And you're feeling good about your team. There's a lot of momentum, and there's a lot of cohesiveness in the room. Obviously, the way they played, and they went through what, three game sevens? Was it four game sevens? Even I forget. Three game sevens, and they won in five.
Yeah.
You look at it that way, and you think, well, we can't do that now. So they make that decision. Maybe they decide to buy him out this offseason. And they take the hit and say, you know, we made a mistake. But the problem is that the guy making that decision will have to be the same guy admitting he made a mistake. Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. There was a lot of talk that...
Doesn't happen often, Drew.
His problems last year, there was a lot of talk that it was fitness-related. He wasn't in the best of shape. He wasn't in the best of health. This year, there's been no talk about that at all. He's apparently come into camp. He came into training camp in much better shape. He committed himself in the offseason. Yet, there still doesn't seem to be anything there. You know...
What do you mean by there isn't anything there?
Well, he just isn't the same player that he was. I mean, it's one thing if it's, you know, because, you know, you're out of shape or you're lazy or whatever it is, and then you decide to commit yourself and you expect that you're going to get back to where you were before when you were in shape previously.
Look at Drew. He's not the same player that he is. First off, I think Mike Richards is still a very good hockey player. He had 41 points last year. He had 10 points in the playoffs last year. I don't see a problem. Like, the issue here, I guess, Richie, is that he makes a little bit too much to be a fourth line player.
But here's
to
the question:
you take Mike Richards out of the lineup, And I think it's a team that is not as deep. And so maybe you have an issue. And, for example, Jarrett Stoll, a guy who's right. older too. So if he gets injured, who replaces Jarrett Stoll as your third-line center, right? So to me, the issue is, yeah, you might be paying him a little bit too much, and you have other players as part of the core, Richie. And, you know, he might get paid too much as a fourth-liner. But to me, he's still a very good hockey player. And I think, if anything, you trade him as opposed to buying him out.
This is I don't think you can, really, is he, unless you take a bad contract. I think this is a question you ask. What does Mike Richards get on the open market?
Does he get much more than what Brad Richards got?
If that's the question, then you have more value buying him out than you would if you kept him at the end of the day. Because if he's providing you $1 million or $2 million worth of value, the buyout will give you some room to use.
You know, if the season, you know, extrapolating his numbers over half a season, over the full year,
28
points in 82 games.
Yeah.
Right, you but know? he's not getting top six forward minutes, and so, I mean, you have to factor that in as well. The fact that he was third, fourth liner, and he got 40 points last year, you know, I think is impressive. I'm a fan of Richards, and I think on the LA Kings, and especially bringing in Gabrick, I think he becomes someone who doesn't play in the top six. But to me, you know, how much is it going to cost to buy him out? $25 million? I just don't see that happening.
You have to be able... He has to turn into, you know, a solid third-line checking center to maybe not be worth... Yep. Certainly not worth that, but worth 3.5 to 4. Then they can deal with that discrepancy.
Sure.
If he's worth 2... You have to buy him out. If he's with one, you have to buy him out.
If he becomes a shutdown guy.
That's right.
You know, maybe the offense isn't there anymore, but if you become a shutdown guy, then you can live with paying him too much.
It's a tough role. I mean, look at the smaller center who is, you know, a scoring kind of, can score a bit. Richards is a better player than Dave Boland. And look at the contract Dave Boland got. But if you watch them on a night-in, night-out basis, I mean, there are similarities. Smaller guys, really competitive guys, been through a lot of wars, aren't performing to the same level they were before. Now, Boland's contract was a mistake by Florida, and I think that will show itself over time. But the idea is, you know, the drop-offs happen sometimes more quickly than you expect. Mm-hmm. And how do you get it back? And at what point do you say it won't come back? And that's going to be a tough decision. And that's why I ask, what do you get in free agency? Because that's really how you should be looking at his value and in terms of what he can give you and what you can get to replace the money that you will, what can you get with the replacement money you will get by buying him out? And if you can get a player that can help you more than he's helping you, it's probably worth it.
Yeah, Rich, it would be $16 million after this year.
Yeah.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll go around the NHL with some NHL news and notes.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Following us, Hustler and Lawless, then Rick Ralph, then Dennis Bayak, Paul Edmonds, and Shane Knighty with your call of tonight's Jets-Kings game with the face-off at 9 p.m. We remind you, tomorrow evening in a special edition of the Jacuzzi Hot Tubs of Winnipeg pregame show, Brian Munns is going to sit down with Timu Solani one-on-one, talk about Timu's great career ahead of the Timu tribute night in Anaheim. Richie, you're doing pregame tomorrow, right?
I am, yeah.
Okay, there you go. So Richie and Rick and Brian Munns and a whole menagerie of
in the
people.
Hot tub.
In the hot tub.
Yep.
Really? Do you guys do the pregame show in a hot tub now?
Did we use that joke last week?
Probably.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, let's go around the NHL with some NHL.
NHL news and notes.
There you go. Remus had the bumper interrupt me. We start in Columbus.
For the better.
Where Sergei Bobrovsky has re-signed a four-year, $29.5 million contract extension with the Blue Jackets. He was set to be a free agent at the end of this season. And really, a lot of people thought that this was going to be a contentious issue between the Blue Jackets and Mr. Bobrovsky. Let's talk both about the contract. The cap hit is a little bit more than $7 million per season. And, you know, your thoughts on this contract and your thoughts that are you surprised it got done so quickly?
Well, I mean, they've been paying guys, right? So I don't know if I'm shocked it got done quickly. They paid Foligno, they paid Dubinsky before that. And I like what Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Davidson are doing in Columbus in terms of what they're trying to build, the program they're trying to build. They're really trying to kind of copy what was done in St. Louis, where they both came from. to a point, Kekalainen was over in Europe when they actually hired him, but he had worked for the Blues before that. John Davidson came from the Blues. I mentioned that Dubinsky and Foligno, I thought it was a lot of money to pay two guys who kind of character but don't necessarily give you offense, notwithstanding Foligno's incredible performance this year offensively, which has garnered an all-star appearance. Bobrovsky is what makes that thing go. And yeah, sure, it's a lot of money, you know, $7+ million. But without him, where would this team have been the past couple of years? You know, and I don't think they can play the style of play that they play, a tough style. But they also leave him out on an island, and they've obviously had injuries this year. But they leave him out on an island and have in the past, and he's saved them, and he's reliable, and they know what they have, and that's one of those things you see in general managers like to sign the guys they have because they know what they have, and they bring him in, kind of take a shot at him, and he's been tremendous. So you want to lock him up. And you don't want the uncertainty of goaltending, right? You look at some of the teams we've talked about. Look at the Minnesota Wild. That's what they're worried about. They're worried about being the Minnesota Wild when you're doing a lot of things well, but goaltending is letting you down.
Sure.
And if you know you have something good, lock them in. And again, I like the term too. You know, I always like more money, less term. And 4 years, that's a good amount. That's nothing too long. It's not, you're going to lock him in for seven years there for a goaltender. And sometimes goaltending can be unpredictable.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good contract.
The cap hit is $7.425 million per season. As he's so far this year, 15-10-2, goals against average of 2.75 and a .917 save percentage, playing, you know, as the goaltender for a team that's been destroyed by injuries.
That's right. That's the point.
You know, and so his numbers might be a little down, but I mean,
just numbers too. I mean, there's, you know,
they're not bad numbers even with the team riddled right with injury.
Yeah, and they started off the season, remember, they won six of their first 23 games or whatever mm-hmm. it was, and they've clawed back kind of into the playoff race here. But I agree with Richie, he's 26 years old, and you sign him to a four-year contract and not a seven-year contract or an eight-year right contract, which is very risky unless you're talking about the best goaltender in the NHL. And I think the Columbus Blue Jackets believe that he is a top-five goaltender, if not a top-10 goaltender in the NHL, and I would agree with that. And Richie, I think, you know, you mentioned, you know, Jarmo Kekalainen and some of the problems he had in signing Ryan Johansson, who's done unbelievably, you know, so far this season.
That was Johansson's own doing, though.
Right, and I think they didn't want to go through that with Sergei Bobrovsky, and that's why they made the contract official midway through the season before the All-Star game, so it doesn't become a distraction. I think this is a really smart signing. I mean, guys, we've seen Bobrovsky make highlight save after highlight save on TSN dating back to when he played with the Philadelphia Flyers, and I bet the Philadelphia Flyers yeah wish they would have kept Sergei Bobrovsky now. You know, no offense to Steve Mason. I like Steve Mason.
He's not as good as Bobrovsky.
He's not as good, but I think his play has been underrated at times. I think the defense in front of him, that's the bigger issue in Philadelphia. But, you know, sticking on Bobrovsky, Drew, you know, I think, you know, you sign him and you pay him, you know, it might be a lot of money, but when you're a top 10 goaltender, I think we'd all agree he might not be necessarily top five, but top 10, whatever. I mean, these subjective rankings are, he's a legitimate number one goaltender whose numbers have been excellent for the last 4 years in Columbus. And, you know, I think when you move forward, Richie makes a good point. I think this team has shown that, you know, they kind of play that team game, the grittier game with players like Boone Jenner and even Nick Foligno. He's a guy that can mix it up and he can also score. But this is a team that, you know, they like to win the lower scoring games and kind of the grinding out type of games. It's not a team that has any superstars on it, really, even though they have three all-stars in the all-star game. It's not, there's no Sidney Crosby there. There's no Tyler Seguin there. So, you know, it makes sense. You don't want to go ahead, Richie, that, especially, you know, you don't have two excellent number one goalies there. So, I mean, no offense to McElhinney, but, I mean, this is a team, right, that, you know, they want to make sure that they get Bobrovsky locked up here. He's been a huge part of the team. It makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And his numbers over the last number of years, I mean, he had a .238 goals against average last year, a .200 goals against average the year before that, and his save percentage has, you know, been in around the .923 or the .932 mark.
He's very athletic.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're talking about a 26-year-old who has his athletic, so you're concerned if he's, you know, a little older. He's entering his prime right now.
Yeah. A minor trade in the NHL, and even yes, a minor trade now makes major news because they're so rare to see. The
true
Calgary Flames have acquired center Drew Shore from the Florida Panthers in exchange for center Corbin Knight. Yeah. You know, both players are currently in the AHL, but according to TSN's Bob McKenzie, I believe, the Flames have high hopes for Drew Shore, thinking he might be a serviceable third-line NHL center. He's got 30 points in 35 games with the San Antonio Rampage thus far. are. You surprised to see Florida give up on them, or is it just a function of the amount of center depth they have?
I was surprised because some people think he can, you know, he's an AHL All-Star this year, Drew. And he's a guy who can play in all situations. So it's a little bit surprising that he give up on a guy, especially when you look at their center courts and you say, okay, Barkov, Bukestad, if you think he could be that third-line center in the future, wouldn't you love to go forward with those 20-year-old guys?
Yeah.
I mean, if Barkov even is 20, I think he's 20 now. But Barkov, Bukestad, and Shore could be very nice. Just weird and odd. Remember, Corbin Knight was traded by the Panthers, and now he's being reacquired. You have to note that as well. Corbin Knight, I haven't seen Drew Shore play in person. If I heard some good things about him, and as I said, you know, the guy can be trusted in all situations. Played, I believe, for the U.S. in the World Championships this past offseason, or past spring, excuse me. If you look at Corbin Knight, I've seen Corbin Knight play a couple times. He's a UND product.
Saw him in Grand Forks, Rich.
I think his role on Florida will be a little bit more of a checking role. A guy who scored a bit in the AHL, but he's a bottom six guy in the National Hockey League. I've heard good things about his character. And I think Florida probably likes some of that, and they think maybe he can play and kind of bring something different to the locker room. So a little bit surprised by that trade, but we'll see.
It goes to show you how bad the Dave Boland contract really is, because if you know, the reason you're trading Drew Shore is because Dave Boland is blocking his way, you know, and you know, maybe Boland's probably
But Knight's a center too, so it's kind of weird that way, right?
Yeah, but Knight really seems to have a much more limited upside than Drew Shore does, at least this far. Has he?
Thoughts? I mean, you know, Richie mentioned we've gone down to UND a couple times. This is probably 3 or 4 years now.
That's when he played.
We saw him play, and he tore it up for UND both times that we saw him play. And, you know, to me, it's, you know, they're both similar age, 23, 24. Calgary's thinking, as Richie mentioned, with Drew Shore, you're thinking that, you know, he can provide some offensive depth on your third line. And, you know, if you're the Florida Panthers, you're thinking, okay, well, Corbin Knight has started to score a little bit at the AHL level, and we'll see what we can get because we have other guys. It becomes a numbers game, too, because you have a lot of young players coming. I mean, we know the players, Bukestad and Barkov and all these guys. Mm-hmm. So to me, I mean, you're hoping that the upside is there so that you're not hurt. Both guys have some upside. Right now, they haven't really proven it at the NHL level. It's only at the AHL level, and they still have, you know, some time, 23, 24 years old, to do that. Right. So I don't think anybody wins or loses that trade.
Want to make note of what the New York Rangers are doing so far. Yeah. They're on a three-game road trip through the Western Conference, through the California teams. They defeated the Anaheim Ducks. They've defeated the Los Angeles Kings. They play the San Jose Sharks tonight. That's the third game in four nights. So tremendous, you know, two solid victories so far on the road trip for the Rangers. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They've won four games in a row. You know, they're only 4 points behind the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Metropolitan Division with two games in hand. Mm-hmm. 5 points behind the New York Islanders with three games in hand. So watch out for the New York Rangers. What they're doing right now, they're really talking their way into being one of the upper echelon Eastern Conference teams right now, and they're really showing it in this Western Conference trip.
Well, it's you know, they can skate, but Derek Stepan comes back off injuries, playing at a point a game pace. And if you watch them play, they can strike quickly. Rick Nash has also been that dominant player, and they're getting some guys back and Lundqvist between the pipes, and of course Alain Vigneault. But you watch them play, and they're really, especially lately, you watch them play. They execute their plan. It's like they just do what they want to do. They don't engage in your style, and they produce. And they're able, with kind of a combination of size and speed and skill. It's a really nice combination Glenn Sather and Jeff Gordon have put together there, and of course their back end. Now, Mark Stahl, that pending UFA question is going to be one that is probably going to hear more about in the next few months. But the roster is currently constructed. I mean, we're talking about the team that went to the finals last year. So yeah, it shouldn't be a shock.
No, it shouldn't be. But I mean, a lot of people thought that they might have just been, you know, sort of fluky last year.
Yeah.
I'm saying they're not that fluky.
Not the way they're playing. And Alain Vigneault is, again, you know, he's really done a nice job. Good coach. Really good coach and kind of a hands-off guy, but players play for him.
Right, Richie. And I think the main difference for me, or the major reason why they're playing better than I thought. I had issues, especially losing guys like Anton Strahlman and losing guys like Brian Boyle. I thought that they were going to struggle at times, and they did struggle earlier in the season. But Rick Nash right now, I mean, he's playing like the Rick Nash of 5 or 6 years ago. He's playing like the 40-goal, 80-point Rick Nash.
Yeah, he is.
And he wasn't playing like that, you know, last year especially. I mean, he's still got 26 goals and had a decent season, but, I mean, he's on pace for 45 goals right now, right? And that's why he was picked to the All-Star game. So I think having him playing at that level and, you know, some of the other guys that they've brought in, like a guy like Kevin Hayes, he hasn't torn it up, but you know, he's playing pretty good there on the third line, you know, for the New York Rangers. And you know, as Richie mentioned, we're not, how many months away are we removed, 5 or 6 months removed from them going to the Stanley Cup final? So this is still a team that's excellent from the goal out, you know, and Dan Boyle's come in there, and obviously, you know, it's a different type of player than Anton Strålman, more of the kind of defensive, physical defenseman, but it's still an excellent group of defensemen, Richie. So I you know, I'm not surprised, you know, that necessarily that they're as hot as they are right now, because I think we've seen them go on these types of runs. But I think for me, it's a little bit, to me, I don't think they're still, when you look at the depth, I don't think it's as good as it was last
year. Yeah, it was not. But they, you know, Derek Brassard, who I don't love, has been great. Give him credit. They can skate, though. Mm-hmm. There's no team's going to come into New York and say, okay, we're going to outskate this team. And the way the game is called now, you're going to be in every game. If you can protect your net with great goaltending and you can skate, you're going to be in a lot of games.
Before we go to break, an update from Foxborough, the AFC divisional playoff game between the Ravens and the Patriots. Patriots were down 14-0. They came back to tie the game at 14-all. They're back down by 14 points. Ravens 28, Patriots 14 in the third quarter. It's a big boy football game. I think you can see it live right now on CTV, if I'm not mistaken. Let's to break. When we come back, rapid fire and cheers and jeers to wrap it up.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. Well, now I'll ask you guys, we talked about it with Brendan McCarthy earlier, is this Saturday afternoon or is this Saturday evening now?
It's afternoon.
Remus still saying afternoon?
Good choice, but Remus.
6 o'clock
there.
Is when evening starts.
You say 6 o'clock for evening?
I don't say that. I think Greenwich says that.
I think evening isn't a scientific matter. I think it's a personal opinion.
Is it? Anyways, you're getting too deep.
It seems like a Rick Ralph kind of discussion.
You're getting too deep for me here.
We'll ask Rick to address it on the pregame show. Anyways, let's go to Rapid Fire to wrap it up.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire for this Saturday afternoon. Earlier this week, the NHL unveiled the All-Star jerseys. Fill in the blank. Upon seeing them, the first word that came to your mind was what?
Puke. I got to give Remus credit, even though he's sitting right in front of me here. He had a funny tweet. The NHL All-Star jerseys look like something you would wear while running or biking at night. I mean, what? Whoever designed these jerseys needs to give their head a shake. Like, what were they thinking here? That no jersey should ever use that color, that neon green, first of all. I mean, I'm sorry. Am I alone here?
With the Seahawks, or at least kind of was, and then now with the Oregon Ducks.
I think they look awful.
So awful is the word.
I love the All-Star game, but I'm sorry. Whoever designed it, I don't know if, like, you know.
I don't know how you can love the All-Star game. That boggles my mind to begin with.
It's fun. It's for the kids. Richard, it's all about the kids, Drew.
The jerseys are tremendous.
Really?
They're great. Because we're talking about it. That's why they're good. Because if they put out their regular jersey, nobody would talk about the All-Star game. Then they put out this jersey and everybody talks about it, and then they tune in to see it. I'm pretty sure that's why. Like, they're so ugly that they're good.
Like, Drew, you know I'm a jersey guy. Like, I have a bunch of different, you know, hockey jerseys, but I'm sorry. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but these are the worst jerseys ever.
Hustler joining us in studio for the final segment. I assume it's because he's desperate to hear the show live and in person, of course. Not to watch the football game or anything along those lines. Many Jets fans are making this road trip right now to Phoenix, Los Angeles, and Anaheim. Earlier this year and in past years, Jets fans had the opportunity to go to New York City and see the Jets in Long Island, New Jersey, and the New York Rangers in Madison Square Garden.
Do you see the Jets in Long Island or on Long Island?
On Long Island. Yeah. Which road trip would you rather take?
I like California, but I'm a New York kind of guy for that. Like, nothing like being in New York for sports. Seriously, if you've gone to any sports event in New York City, there's nothing like it. It's the way they care about sports in New York almost can't be cared about. They don't care about it the same way in California, I'll put it that way. They want to chill. They want to go to the surf. They want to, you know, eat some fresh fish on the beach. But it's not like New York. We were there, all of us, for your bachelor party, and we had a blast.
Yeah, I'm a little bit biased, Drew, because we saw the Jets in Long Island, Newark, and in at Madison Square Garden. So I'm a little bit biased. That was a trip of a lifetime. I had tons of fun, and we saw a bunch of other Winnipeggers during that first season that were there. But I've never been to California. I know Mr. California to my left is okay. is there all the time.
All right.
So Mr. Palm Springs. So the thing is, I'd like to go to California too. And I think they offer completely different experiences. So both trips would be tons of fun for Jets fans looking for a little trip.
Flyers defenseman Andrew McDonald was a healthy scratch on Thursday versus Washington, the second time this year he's been a healthy scratch. He's in the first year of a six-year, $30 million contract. He signed that just in the offseason. Are you surprised at the steep drop-off in McDonald's play this season?
I haven't seen him play enough to speak to that, Drew. I'm not surprised that he's not performing up to his contract, I can say that. A guy who played with Travis Hamonic, I think Hamonic made him look better than he did. I don't think anybody in their right mind thought he was worth him the contract that he got, and certainly not a top-pairing guy, and kind of paid like a between a top-pairing and a second-pairing guy. Just another really bad contract from Paul Holmgren, and one of the reasons why you see Ron Hextall now in charge of the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah, and I think Andrew McDonald, Richie, is getting a lot of heat this year in Philadelphia. You know, he's not a guy that's ever put up huge offensive numbers. Like, you're talking a guy that's averaged, you know, maybe 20 points over his career with the New York Islanders. He's more of a defensive guy, known for being more of a physical guy. He was always at the top of the, blocking shots and all that. And I think he's struggled. But, you know, you can't put all the blame on him. I mean, other players haven't played really well in Philadelphia. I mean, Nicholas Grossman hasn't played very well. Mark Streit, I think, is someone who, you know, his better years are behind him. So I think Andrew McDonald's still a pretty good defenseman, but that group as a whole has issues.
It speaks to the money issue, but remember, you know, the late Don Baisley said, I read this in an article, I forget who wrote this, said that, you know, you're always better off taking a little bit less than a little bit more if you're the player, especially in a case like Andrew McDonald, because the reasoning behind that was that if you took more than maybe what you're worth on the market, then the more pressure, and the GM, now it's a different GM, but is less apt to protect you if they feel like, you know, you're not worth what you're, as opposed to if you're taking a little bit less, they're more apt to protect you. And I think that's a factor here. There's so much pressure on the guy after this contract because he's playing. He feels like he has to play up to that deal. And frankly, he's not worth that deal. So he puts more pressure on himself. And then what happens is whatever he's worth, say $4 million, he's not even playing up to that level right now.
With great money comes greater expectations. We know the Jets have taken the most minor penalties in the NHL thus far this season.
We do.
Do you think that the ref you suck chant that is heard often at MTS Center has any ramifications at all, or has caused the refs to be more strict against the Jets than other NHL teams?
What kind of a question is this? The refs don't care what the fans say. Have you heard what the fans say at these games, Drew? Ref you suck. The chant in the old arena was worse, a little bit more harsh than ref you suck, too.
Drew, I can say this unequivocally. That's the worst rapid-fire question.
That's the worst question
I've ever heard.
Yes. We have a bunch of guys in the studio, hustlers here. Alex, can we start a Drew You Suck chant?
Feel free.
No, you know what, Drew? I'll say this much. I don't. Obviously, it doesn't have any ramifications, but I think you know what? I love the fans at the MTS Center. When I go as a fan, I love it up there in the 300s. But I think, you know, the ref you suck chant has jumped the shark.
It's a terrible chant. It's a terrible rapid-fire question, but that chant's awful. It's a chant that you hear in ECW arena. It's disgusting.
I do agree with me, on both of those accounts.
Thank you. Sabres forward Chris Stewart is an unrestricted free agent at season's end.
Below average player has been talked to him more than this guy.
Well, that's going to be my next question. It sort of leads right into it.
Sure.
He has 12 points this season. Both Sabres goaltenders, Michael Neuwirth and Jonas Enroth, are also unrestricted free agents at season's end. Of the three players, which one should, not will, but should, attract the most interest on the trade market?
Doesn't Enroth to Minnesota just make the most sense?
I think so.
They need a goalie. Yep.
There you go.
I think Chris Stewart will get some attention too, though.
He will because he's big and he has skill.
Yep.
That's why. I mean, he can skate too for a big guy. That's why he's going to attract the most attention.
He can score some goals.
Let's wrap it up with cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
The mayor of Palm Springs, Richard Pollock.
This is an easy cheer. The cheers to, cheers to the Ducks organization for making this retirement night the night when the Winnipeg Jets are in town. That was classy. And Remus and I actually were in Anaheim, and they are giving this a lot of attention, as Brian Hayward mentioned. His jersey is everywhere. They were promoting this night a month ago. And so this whole event and what everybody's doing here at the station, that gets my cheer.
Yeah, I got to cheer Timu, Drew. It's all about Timu, as we've called it. It's the Timu Sports Network. I also wanted to cheer April Reimer. She was bullied, and I thought it was absolutely ridiculous and despicable that people were giving her a hard time on Twitter, and she started an anti-bullying initiative called Tweet Suite, which I think is great. I think, you know, Twitter, unfortunately, you see a lot of people get picked on. There's a lot of inappropriate comments, so I think it's nice that she's launching that initiative.
I think it's also nice that her husband knows who Nelson Mandela was.
Too
was,
soon?
No, that wasn't James Reimer.
Too soon?
No, it was
that's the point.
It was Jonathan Bernier.
Her husband knows who he was.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'll wrap up...
Ezzy, do you know who...
Huss, help me out here.
We'll explain it with sock puppets after the show, Ezzy. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer the life and celebrate the life of J.P. Parisi, who passed away earlier this week. Obviously, the father of Zach Parisi, played for the Minnesota North Stars. He played for the New York Islanders, was on the 1972 Summit Series team for Canada, lost his life to lung cancer. So we send our best to the Parisi family, and we wish them well and say thank you to J.P. Parisi for everything he's done in the hockey world and outside of the hockey world as well. That's it for Saturday afternoon and the Legal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Big thank you to our guests, Anaheim Ducks analyst Brian Hayward, Jim Fox, the LA Kings analyst, and Brendan McCarthy of the St. John's Telegram. In case you missed any of it, it is available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Follow us on Twitter, at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and their home for the Winnipeg Jets, and all your news for the Winnipeg Jets is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.